Welcome to the Wellbeing Ignites Well-Doing podcast, produced by OOT Social Health, where the focus is on exploring the essential elements that drive organizational success, human-centric leadership. Hosted by Adjoa Boahedi, principal of AKB Talent Edge.
Welcome to the Wellbeing Ignites Well-Doing podcast. My name is Tiagi Delanerol, and I'm going to be your host today. I'm joined by Dave Allman, founder of Wellbeing at Work and Carrots. So we're going to be speaking about the GPS of employee well-being, turning care into culture. Now, Dave is on a mission to rewire how organizations think about care. As the founder of Wellbeing at Work and Carrots, Dave has built platforms that transform vague well-being intentions into data-driven strategies that drive real impact on performance, retention, and engagement. In this episode, we're going to be exploring how Dave's Google Maps approach to well-being helps leaders navigate the complexities of emotional, social, physical, and financial well-being, empowering them to meet employees where they are and guide them towards a thriving work life. We'll discuss how moving from check-the-box well-being programs to personalized, scalable well-being maps is not only the future of work, it's a business imperative. So in this episode, we're going to be exploring why well-being is more than yoga and fruit bowls. It's the core of an organization's performance. How data helps leaders prove the care in ways employees can see and feel, the link between a thriving workplace and a reduced turnover, burnout, and disengagement, why personalized well-being journeys help build resilient, high-performing cultures, and how Gallup's science and smart tech can operationalize care at scale. Welcome, Dave.
Well, it is an absolute pleasure to be here, and that was certainly an introduction that's going to be hard to follow. So how are you?
Good. I'm excited to get to know you a little bit better. We always start the podcast really focusing on the human because we believe in human-centric leadership. So we start off with Proust questions. So the very first Proust question is, which talent would you most like to have?
Well, it's a great question. I wish that I had the ability to be fluent in all major languages with the idea of just being able to connect people because there's just such an opportunity. If we can understand how they speak and think, there's a chance to find alignment to do great things together. So I'd love to be fluent in all languages as a talent.
I love that. This is actually a very popular response. I've seen this as a core theme within the council. I'm looking forward to re-examining all of our data points from the podcast, but I love it. I love it. And it's right on theme. I think a lot of leaders feel the same way you do. What would it be if you were to die and come back as a person or a theme? What would you choose?
Wow. The first thing that comes to mind is I'd want to be a compass. And the idea that a compass helps us all stay true to our purpose and our passion. And when we drift, it can bring us back to our true north. I think that would be helpful, just if we could all find our true north and stay true to it.
Yeah, I love that. It's right on theme with what I shared earlier, right? With respect to the organization that you're building and how you're creating that Google Maps. It actually leads very well into our next question. So you've described well-being at work as the Google Maps for employees, mental health and well-being. How does that analogy help reframe how leaders think about supporting their people?
Yeah, you know, just most people, you'll hear the phrase well-being is a journey. We don't believe that. We say well-being is a destination, and the key is find a map. We say destination because the destination could be today, this week, this month, and specifically that's around goal setting. And if we think of its daily, weekly, monthly destinations, the natural thing is we all, without even thinking twice, go to our phone. It instantly says, hey, you are here. We are then in control of the destination. Where are we trying to go? We just took that simple, if you will, routine that we all do, and we said, let's build the technology, the smart tech, and then surround it with, you know, human touch, because both are essential. But, you know, basically you have location, destination, and dynamic directions. It's no harder than that. And it becomes easy for a leader to reinforce, and more importantly, for leaders and individuals to just follow, because we're already built that way.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, right? And I think if we reframe that thinking as a destination, I like that. I'm gonna keep that in mind, because I've always also seen it as a journey. But I like how it really is something that you got to work towards, and you need to have it as kind of that North Star, as you referred to earlier.
To that one thought, if it's a journey, it sounds abstract, it sounds soft, it gets lost, suddenly it loses the business case. But also, if you think of a journey, that can be daunting. And then the question becomes, well, why bother? It's too big of a effort to undertake. So we've got to have these small little steps where we're having continuous success, mm-hmm. that we're experiencing the growth and making progress. So it's really just about human behavior and change management.
I love it. Clearly, you understand the science behind this, which is why we're speaking today. So let's speak a little bit more about the platform. So how does your platform shift organizations from generic offerings to much more targeted, relevant support that improves individual well-being?
So one of the things we found is there are a lot of fantastic point solutions. What we normally see is that the point solution ends up being for a handful, as opposed to the intention of it being used by, let's just say, the majority of an employee group. One of the big things we're doing is saying, hey, all of these resources exist within the company. It could be benefits. It could be total rewards. It could be, you know, access to LinkedIn library for learning and development. It could be culture. What we're doing is simply taking all of those resources and dynamically serving them up as directions based on where a person, if you will, locates in their current well-being. So a lot of what we're doing is just helping to showcase and celebrate investments that typically don't get used because they're lost in the day-to-day rush and a person doesn't know they're available to take advantage of. So that's one play, which is just optimization of existing spend.
Yeah.
The other play then is, you know, how do we connect, if you will, that smart tech with what are the roadmaps? We call them growth guides, but what are the simple guides that I can do as self-paced, or that, a team could do without a manager's involvement, or a team could do being led by a manager. So let's give them all the maps in the, you know, if you will, in the glove box, just lots of different simple job aids that they can use to bring the human touch to life as they're taking advantage of the smart tech. So again, it's smart tech, human touch. That's always the equation for success. We're just trying to bring that to life at scale.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like that as well. You know, sometimes we think we have too much digital kind of interference, but in some cases it's needed, right? Because it really does provide that guidance that we all kind of crave. So let's talk a little bit about your special relationship with Gallup, right? You have a really unique relationship. You reference Gallup's findings as well, that only 21% of employees believe that organizations care about their well-being. So what would happen to engagement, performance, and retention if we flip that to 75%?
That's such a fantastic question. And our relationship with Gallup, we're obviously extremely proud of. They're just a fantastic partner. If you think of the equivalent of Maslow's hierarchy, but if we were to reframe it, you know, the foundation as it relates to individuals in any kind of organizational setting is, do I believe that the people around me care about me? When you believe that I care about you, there's a direct correlation to trust. So if I think you care about me, I'm naturally more inclined to trust you. And in return, you're more inclined to entrust me to do my job and to do what I've been, you know, hired to do. The point in that is that when care and trust are suddenly flipped to where 75% of people strongly agree that the organization and leadership cares about me, it directly connects to things like belonging and, you know, recommending as a great place to be, directly connects to finding a reason for purpose that's greater than the individual or the company. So there's this natural rallying to a higher call, that, if you will, that true north. And once that's in place, suddenly we're agile, we show up, we've got the extra energy, we're fully engaged. So now performance is just a given because I've got these building blocks in place, and like, I really like it here because I feel cared about. I'm with a group of people I trust. I mean, it's human. It is human nature. And it's, you know, it's a version of Maslow's hierarchy, except it's in the phenomena of what drives growth, which is really the key right now in today's marketplace. What's driving growth?
Yeah. You're absolutely right, especially in the age of AI, right? Like, humans are still going to be in the workforce, where it's not going to be all 100% AI, and leaders, I think, really need to know what makes their people tick, right? And a lot of this is around people, like employees, actually needing to be able to also connect with one another and have that sense of, as you pointed out, care. Right? That the belonging piece that's in Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Okay. So how can leaders use real-time data to proactively support employee well-being and shift from reactive wellness programs to embedded cultural norms?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, the nature of our technology is pivoting from, I think everybody would agree that there's a fatigue right now as it relates to surveys. You know, if you look at the word survey, it's really a surveillance system, and nobody cares for surveillance systems to be looked at or spied on. Everything we're doing in the analogy of a GPS is a guidance system. So the very nature of our technology is real time. Let's real time locate where you are in six essential areas: emotional, career, social, financial, physical, community. With those coordinates, let's real time then provide, based on where you want to go, recommendations and resources to help you get there. That data then just becomes, if you will, the insights dashboard that, when you de-identify it, highest level of, you know, security and privacy, but then present it, suddenly now leaders have visibility to the care, trust, belonging, social determinant. Like, they just have a new level of access based on what's happening real time, as opposed to a survey, which we know is kind of dated, like fish in the refrigerator. It fails.
That's a great way of looking at it. I mean, you know, I've been having a lot of conversations with leaders through the Employee Wellbeing Council's Innovation Committee. And many have spoken about this, about the survey fatigue that you're talking about. And it's a real thing. It's a real thing out there. So you're absolutely right.
Only to the thought. I mean, think about the well-intended leaders have a survey. There's a delay.
Yeah.
We know care and trust is already at the lowest levels since it's been tracked and reported, which is not good right now. And it's not because leaders don't care. There's just this incredible gap, mostly based on expectations that aren't being, if you will, mutually managed. But that delay in the survey results basically just further erodes the trust and the care. So the unintended consequence is it's creating a larger gap. So again, there are simple ways to close those gaps.
Yeah, I think, you know, clearly you're you're onto something in terms of, like, I think very prescriptive, like what your technology provides is very prescriptive solutions that are already in place, that are in plain sight, but perhaps people still are not aware of them.
Well said. We are literally just presenting what's in plain sight and just making it kind of real time and contextually relevant, because we are here and this is when we need it. And it's unfair to think leaders can communicate. It's like training for an interception. And like, you don't train for the interception, you play good defense.
Yeah.
And so you can't communicate at the right moment and everybody loses as a result.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I mean, when I think about technology overall, I think having technology be a form of a coach, right, that has an understanding of all of the various data points, is kind of a good thing. I don't see an AI type coach or prescriptive solution being unhelpful. I think it has all the merits of being extremely helpful. So on to the next question. Why is it essential to tailor well-being resources to the individual? Very similar to what we were just talking about. And how does your platform achieve that at scale?
You know, that's just a simple use case for smart tech. I mean, you know, inventorying all the resources that exist within a company or say within a community, you know, mapping them to those six essential areas, if you will, those GPS coordinates. Once we have the mapping, it's just, you know, based on where you are, whether you're thriving, struggling, or suffering in those six areas, it's just a math exercise to prioritize and present, you know, in a fashion that you would care for, that say, you know, here's in priority the types of resources available. Pick what suits you. By the way, ignore the rest. By the way, provide anonymous feedback. That's one of the other biggest struggles for great leaders is it's very hard to get meaningful feedback of all the resources that are available. So, you know, we're just, as a byproduct, giving the feedback based on what's getting used and what's getting dismissed. So, you know, it's just a nice way to get aggregate data for previous decisions or previous spend, so you know how to use it differently or adjust it going forward. So, It's a simple app solving a very just real and obvious problem that we're all facing right now.
Yeah, thank you so much for that. And thank you for bringing the technology to the forefront, right? Because I know getting anything off the ground takes a lot of work and perseverance and dedication and precision. So thank you. Thank you for your innovation. Leading into the next question, so what have you seen from work when organizations try to reduce the stigma and create open conversations about mental health and emotional health?
You know, the first thought that comes to mind is a phrase that a mentor gave me early on, and I'm sure everyone has heard it. If you're looking for feathers, you'll find a turkey. And I think vocabulary or the taxonomy is really, really important in terms of word choice. You know, as an example, the word well-being is there's a lot of distortion and a lot of distraction. And as a result, any kind of real disruption that's trying to break through can't because of all the noise. What I'm finding, and again, it's early, but if we think of word choice, I think fundamentally all of us have, you know, a desire for growth. And, you know, if we think of transformation, we're either growing or dying. And the point in that is that I think the area of mental health, which is so critically important, that if we reframe the conversation around just our desire for growth and what is standing in the way of that growth, again, back to that idea of location, destination, directions, simple changes in vocabulary make the conversation easier to have. And, you know, as an example, with the word growth, it rallies to the growth of the individual personally, professionally. And of course, it rallies to the business because ultimately it's going to be revenue and margin contribution. And so I think we need to simplify vocabulary
Back to my opening, it'd be great if we could speak all languages, because we could then standardize on 7 or 8 key terms and they'd mean the same thing regardless of translation.
It's almost like we should have a universal language. I mean, sometimes people may think English is the universal language, but it's not, right? We should have that one universal language that everyone can speak, right? And be a part of. Or make the world a better place for sure.
Well, you just gave me goosebumps. I mean, wouldn't that be, and again, in our native tongue, but if the words were the same word choice with a consistent definition, I mean, that's the idea of standards. You know, by the way, Google Maps works based on standards. There's an agreed to taxonomy. And so here we are. None of this is rocket science. It's just trying to make common sense common practice. And, you know, that's been a big part of our design effort, is just how do we make common sense common practice, and don't claim to be more than you are. Like, just be good at what you do. Don't claim doing that. So,
I want to share, after the podcast, I'm going to share with you something that I recently read and came across from the International Space Federation. Okay. I would think that it would be like, why would something around connection, human connection, really be a part of the research that's being done by the International Space Federation? And it's it actually goes into some of the research that they've done to showcase that all beings are interconnected. So they're now fundamentally finding the science behind it. So I'll share that with you. I'm actually going to do a post on that on LinkedIn for those folks that would also be interested. But we're all interconnected, right? We should all have a universal language so we can break down barriers, break bread, really figure out we're all the same. We're all human. It doesn't matter.
I think the power of the word system, whether it's us as a human being, as a human system, an organization as a system, society as a system, it's all interconnected. I mean, there is a higher purpose that's making sense of all of this, and we're all a part of it. So
absolutely.
I really like to see that article. So,
wait till you see. I'm excited. I've been listening to some of their, because they actually have it in audio format as well, some of their research. It's like an hour and a half long, but it is a well worth it even listen or a read. They have it in both formats. All right, moving on. What gives you hope about how organizations are evolving to genuinely care for their people?
It's just so... That's a fantastic question. So by default, I wake up every day. I mean, you know, my natural strengths, if we were thinking, you know, something like Clifton's strengths, is maximize or see the good and make it better. So I'm always looking for what's right and how can we make it better. I genuinely believe that with rare exception, leaders wake up wanting to do the right thing. And in this world of, you know, an abundance of technology, which creates all the things that you've already mentioned. My hope is that I believe leaders really care. I believe that there's this disconnect of connecting the resources that they're offering with the voice and the words that they're using to ultimately get to the associates. So the void, the gap, is really just aiding to this belief, which I think is oftentimes wrong, that my employer doesn't care about me, therefore I'm not going to trust them. I think really good people are trying to do the right thing, and key in that is they care about their people. I believe that it's not that they're committed to caring for their people, and that's where the expectations, I think, need to be mutually reset. I need to lean in and take advantage of the resources that are available. But I have to be curious, and I think I've heard you say we can't make a horse drink, but you have the responsibility to lead them to the trough. And again, it's this simple connection of some smart tech, some human touch, some simplification of vocabulary. And it takes very small little wins to create initial momentum. And that momentum goes from a moment in time to a movement over time. It's just change management and just a little bit of technology to add to help enable it.
Yeah, really, really value that. And And to me, I mean, I think to your point, right, leaders, I think, genuinely do care and they want to do right by their employees who happen to be humans, right? And they want to make sure, I think the beautiful thing about your technology that I've observed is that you're not taking away from anything that's already in place. What you're trying to do is you're really trying to enhance the offerings that are in place so that they are much more prescriptive, right? I always attribute things like to a doctor, you know, the doctor could potentially give you any sort of medication, but they don't because they're skilled and they're trained to ask the right questions and to find the right medications and, you know, solutions. So anywho.
It's a great parallel. It's a great.
Yeah, absolutely. So in closing, Dave, because we want to get to know you even better, right? We want to know if you were to talk to your Dave at your 20-something self, what piece of advice would you give yourself?
Wow. Well, so, you know, at the spry age of 63 right now, 27 feels like, not to be exact, but 56 years ago or so. 46 years ago. Now everybody's checking my math.
No worries.
You know, I think there's, two things. I had some pretty big setbacks and I, you know, in the spirit of, I would call them detours.
Okay.
And those setbacks at the time, I was pretty disappointed and angry at those detours. And now in retrospect, I'm really grateful. You know, as I got further from the accident, I'm very grateful for what those detours caught me. And so, you know, in the spirit of everything's for a reason, I believe I used to think I could create the reasons. I think that I can, I think I influence, I don't control. So part of that is just, you know, my spiritual growth. So trust the detours. I think the other thing that, and it sounds so trite, I was not nearly present enough in my 20s and 30s. I was so oriented to what's next that I really did miss the present of the presence.
Oh, and yeah. That's a good way.
It may sound trite. It's just, and so now, you know, at 63, just recognizing if there's an hourglass and there's only so much sand in it, it makes it easier. It makes it easier. It's still not easy to try to be present and just create the joy that's around us. And that human touch, that human connection that I know you're so passionate about. I mean, dead without the human connection.
Absolutely. It's kind of like, you know, even when I go for walks, because I do think it's not just about humans, it's about all beings. And that's what this this research from International Space Federation ultimately shares, is that all beings carry light and there's a certain commonality and connection factor to us. So, for example, like I love to go for walks just in our neighborhood. And I love to touch leaves, like the leaves of various plants. Yeah. I just think I get something out of it and they get something out of it. It's like an energy exchange, which is a good thing, right? You know,
that's magnificent, by the way. I think my mom, also known as my mentor and mommy, she is 93 years old, still vibrant, incredible, prolific modern artist. You know, she speaks to the energy and the light, and she reminds me, always leave the room with more energy or light than you found it. And you just sparked that for some reason, like the energy and light that's all around us.
It's all around us. It's in everything. Even in something like a desk, it's in everything. So this is what the research talks about. I'm so intrigued. And I want to dive into it further because I just think this is such interesting research that's coming out. But Dave Ullman, thank you. Thank you for this conversation. This has been fantastic. It's been great getting to know you, and it's been great getting to know your work, right? And what it represents and what it stands for. So thank you for your time today on behalf of the Employee Wellbeing Council.
Yeah, and just right back to you, just what you're bringing to life and the light that you're shedding and the energy that you bring. Thank you. Thank you for everything you're doing.
Thank you for joining us on the Wellbeing Ignites Wellbeing podcast, brought to you by OOT Social Health. We hope today's conversation has sparked new insights and inspired you to prioritize well-being in your journey to organizational success. Remember, when well-being ignites, well-doing follows. Stay tuned for more episodes as we continue to explore the power of human-centric leadership. Until then, be well and lead with purpose.